So there you go. All right, so what's y'all's background? Like, where you born, where you raised?
I was born in Navarro County, Carson County, Texas, on August 14, 1930. My mother had twin boys. And we grew up in Carson County, went to school there. And I was a product of the Navarro County school system, segregated, of course, and didn't know anything about integration. And so we got a very inferior education. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that we went through in terms of picking cotton and what you call primitive conditions, as we had outdoor toilets and no paved streets and didn't get utilities until, well, I think I might have been about 11 or 12 at the time we got utilities. We had to haul our water from places, filler stations, and had to wash the net and had to drink it, and mosquitoes would be in the round of in the thing of the barrel, because we had put it in the barrel and you put a cover over it. And but mosquitoes was they were manifest, what you call it, yeah, in those barrels. And so, but anyway, we drank water from that, we bathed in that, and we washed our clothes, dishes, and all of it, and those under those conditions. And that wasn't easy. And of course, the thing that really got me was picking cotton. I hated picking cotton like God hates sin. And so, but we had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and be in order to be at the field, be in the field by 6 o'clock. You had to get up and get ready and get your stuff, and then you had to drive X number of miles to the cotton patch. My Uncle Buddy used to drive us, he had a truck, and we did, sometimes it'd be about 23 of us in the back of that truck. Mm-hmm. But under those conditions, we grew up.
You got an education.
Yeah, we got an education, inferior as it was, but it was enough to get you by in the black community. Of course, I mean, black people were only the only jobs that were available to them back then were you either were a preacher or a teacher. And if you weren't a preacher, then if you weren't a teacher, then you did odd jobs, you know, manual labor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Going to school the first day and staying out until...
Oh, yeah, you go to school the first day and get your books. And then they kept you out to pick cotton until the end of December. Then you went back in January, and they expected you to pass the midterm test in January, which I passed most of them, but I did fail one in my junior year. I flunked the test, but that was incredible that your parents kept you out all that time, 6 months, and expected you to keep up with, you know, your class, and it was just impossible for you to do so.
Yeah.
But I grew to hate farm life, fields, and picking cotton and chopping cotton and pulling corn. I grew to hate that like God hates sin. And but anyway, we got through it, and then my twin brother, when we were, we were 16, I believe, and he didn't want to go back to school, so he joined the Army. Your parents had to sign for you to go in the Army, and my grandmother signed for him. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to go because my uncle had told me enough. It was shortly after World War II, had told me enough about it that I didn't want no parts of it. And but that's how I grew up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how'd y'all end up in Tyler?
My mother moved over here.
Yeah. She came over here in 50. 52. And I was in service, and I got drafted, and I was in service. And
you said in the Korean War?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Korean War, yeah. And I spent a whole year, yeah, in Korea, and got ready to rotate back home, and caught pneumonia. And so anyway, we come back.
See, mother moved over here. I was in Dallas going to school.
Mm-hmm.
I moved here with her. When he came from Korea, he came here and we got married.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we...
That's how y'all know each other. So like, how did the civil rights movement start in Tyler in general?
How did what?
How did the civil rights movement start in Tyler?
Oh, it started back in, what fact of the matter is, Thurgood Marshall, who served on the Supreme Court, he was the NAACP attorney, I think, and they had the trial here in Tyler back in 1948, I believe it was, 48 or 49, I don't quote me on those years because I could be wrong. But anyway, they had the trial here in Smith County, in Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, when they outlawed segregation, then the system went to work toward keeping segregation or trying to make black schools equal to white schools.
Mm-hmm.
Or reasonable facsimile, not equal, because there's no way they're going to be
equal.
Separate but equal.
Mm-hmm.
But that was what they were supposed to have tried. But anyway, at that time, when they did say that the schools had to integrate, they had to cut out all of the segregation. Black kids, I mean, the high school here, which was Emmett Scott Senior High, they had just built, the school was built, I think, in 1951 or 52. But anyway, I think the first graduating class was 1952. And they closed it down. They wouldn't use it. They had built John Tyler on the loop, and Robert E. Lee was out in South Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the two high schools. And so everybody had to either go to, they drew the lines, the school lines, and you either had to go to Lee or John Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Emmett Scott was closed. They wouldn't even use it as a junior high or anything. And they kept all the junior high schools, but then they drew the lines as such that white people didn't have to go to black schools, but black kids school. Had to go to white school. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way that happened. But we got involved because of...
Are you talking about
the
civil rights period or school?
Civil rights period and the school.
Mm-hmm. Civil rights. You want to expound on that?
Mm-mm. Well, what about just like...
We know a lot about the school because of the walkout. Mm-hmm. There was a John Tyler,
mm-hmm.
and our children took part in that. And that was history making because... and it was... Mm-hmm. Because of a cheerleading election.
But I can say, tell you about this though now. Southwestern Bell, I was in communications when I was in service.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Como School and I was a Como chief, had a MOS, a Como chief. In Southwestern Bell, we took a test. They had linemen. Had so many jobs open for linemen. I believe they had five or six, I believe, jobs open for linemen. Okay, out of the 30 people that took the test, I came in fourth.
Mm-hmm.
No, third. I came in third. And the supervisor called me in and told me that he couldn't hire me because of my color. This was in 53.
Mm-hmm.
This was 1953. So I didn't get the job, and he hired two black men, Robert Jones hired him as a janitor, and he hired, I can't think of his name right now, but both of them were janitors.
Mm.
But I didn't get the job because, even though I had all of the The qualifications.
Yeah.
Yeah, had all the qualifications. Had been to school and knew what they were, as far as installation, knew it backward and forward. But they wouldn't hire me because I was black. And so that I had that, and this was in 1953. And when you get that kind of joke, no, it's 1955. But when you get that kind of joke, you just it really lets you know how segregation really worked,
mm-hmm.
and how discrimination really worked.
You know, so did that kind of like say like let you tell yourself like I want to make some change happen, try to make some change happen?
No, I didn't really think of it in that. I didn't get involved with the change process until my kids went to John Tyler, and then they had to walk out, Shirley to walk out on the election.
Mm-hmm.
And when they walked out, then I got involved. We got involved with that, and they walked out, and from that, we started a newspaper, and what else did we do? Oh, God.
Anyway, let's talk about that walkout.
Mm. Okay, yeah, that walkout.
Because a lot of people don't even know it happened.
Do y'all think that's something that's like overlooked by people in Tyler?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's something that's overlooked by people in Tyler?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know.
Not really overlooked, but since so much time has passed,
mm-hmm. just people don't know about it.
They don't know about it. That was 1970 or 1971.
1971.
Mm-hmm. And Ricky was a senior,
mm-hmm.
and Sandra was a.
She was a sophomore. Sophomore.
And they had a cheerleader election, and on the ballot it said, "Tell you how many whites to vote for."
The principal.
And how many blacks to vote for?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that wasn't right. It wasn't fair.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids came home. They told me if they actually voted like that, that they were gonna walk out. And the next day, they did. And so about 300 black kids walked out of school, and they were out on the campus around the flagpole.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Alvin Anderson was the vice principal. He came out and he told me, he said, either go back to class or get off the campus. Well, when you give children an ultimatum, they took the least resistance. They walked out the campus. Mm-hmm. So we had 300 kids
mm-hmm.
out of school. They walked off the campus and walked over here to what was then Lincoln Park, and they gathered over there.
Mm-hmm.
And parents found out about it, and so then we all gathered at Pierce Moss Funeral Home, didn't we, Rosedale, mm-hmm. that night, and they chose Rosedale to be the
spokesman
or the chairman
mm-hmm.
of the committee they formed, and it was known as the Tower Organization.
It wasn't concerned parents then, but what was
it? It became concerned parents and patrons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was
the spokesman for that?
Mm-hmm. He was the chairperson of the organization. Mm-hmm. And we had to get our kids back in school. Well, they wouldn't let them back in without being integrated. It was a big deal.
Really?
Yes, it was mm-hmm. a real big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Martin Edwards was the only black person on the school board.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell about that, Rosedale.
Well, we had asked Don Gwynn, who was the president of the school board, Attorney Don Gwynn, from Louisiana. We'd asked him to give us an audience, because we had a common problem. We had over 300 black kids out on the streets, and our parents wanted to address the school board and so we could get them back in the school.
Yeah.
And Don Gwynn told me, until you niggas go over and act like you're supposed to act, and act like you're supposed to be, you know we're not going to get. And he wouldn't give us an audience. And so we decided then that we were going we were going to get legal. We were going to get some legal action. So we did. We went, and Ken Miller was the attorney that we chose. It was somebody told us about him. We went downtown. He had an office in the Bryan Petroleum building then. And, of course, he was ostracized later on after all of this happened. But anyway, we chose him. Yeah, he took our case. And we went up to Sherman, with Sherman, Texas.
The judge we need to see was in Sherman, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Judge William Wayne Justice.
And he meant exactly what his name meant. He Justice. That was his name. And so we went there, and he told the school board, including Mr. Plyler, who was, what was Plyler? Plyler was the principal. No, he was the superintendent of school. But he told Don Gwynn that he meant for those kids to be back in school the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Mr. Gwynn, I want you to hear me good. Mr. Plyler, you understand what I'm saying? I don't care how you're going to notify them, because this was at night when we left there. It was that evening when we got up there, but it was at night when we finished.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I want these kids back in school in the morning. He said, now how you notify them, I don't know how you do it, but I want them back in school in the morning. I'm holding you contempt of court. And so we walked out of there that night, and we called and had a meeting at it was Cashmere Garden Funeral Home then, yeah, where Community Funeral Home is now.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents met us over there, and we told them what had happened, and we were to send their kids back to school the next morning, and they were going to
let them in.
They're going to let them in. But before then, Mr. What was that principal's name? Oh, God. I just had his name on the tip of my tongue a while ago. But anyway, the principal had he and the school board had set up a what you call interrogation. You know, just like, they're going to determine, interview you to see whether they're going to let you back in school or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was completely, completely off the cuff, and it should not be. It was discriminatory, and it never should have happened. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we wouldn't do it. We wouldn't let our kids go back in. But anyway, after we got the message and we told them that night, they got on the radio and television, KLTV and everywhere. They let them know that the Judge Justice had signed an order that kids would be back in school that next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. But that wasn't the end of it, because we're going to have a trial.
And at the same time, we didn't know that Robert E. Lee was having a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Robert E. Lee was having more trouble than
they were having more trouble than we were. Mm-hmm. There were lots of fights and a lot of bad things that went on in Robert E. Lee.
Yeah.
Didn't y'all help? Didn't y'all help get like the logo change or something?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. We got all of
Texas Education Agency came down,
mm-hmm.
And we met with them. And they changed the symbolism.
They forced them to. They wasn't going to do it.
What was the original logo?
Robert E. Lee Rebels. Robert E. Lee Rebels.
Rebels. Did it have like a Confederate mm-hmm. flag in it?
They had a big Confederate flag. It was bigger than this house. Mm-hmm. Football players and all the sportsmen had to run up on it. They had a cannon that they shoot off.
Yeah, and I remember Mom and Pop telling me that the black football players wouldn't even run under the flag.
They wouldn't run around the flag. They run around it.
Yeah.
But Robert E. Lee Rebels
was a fact. So.
Mm-hmm. But they were having more problems. We of course at the time we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but anyway, after we got things settled at John Tyler, and after the trial was over, and we won, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And but they wouldn't let Ken Miller have an office down in the Bryan Petroleum or nowhere. Nobody would rent him an office. And so he went, he had started working out of his house, but anyway, it wasn't too much longer after he died. I don't know what was wrong with him.
Keith Miller that you see on TV.
On TV now,
you
his dad.
You ever seen big man stand up in the street and say, you about to see a car wreck?
Car.
Oh, yeah.
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 That's his son.
That's his son. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
And we had threats on our lives.
Mm-hmm.
The night that the TA came, a lot of white boys would gather around us, and some black guys came up and ran them out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like what you see on the movies.
Oh, yeah. It was scary. It was scary. The night that the Texas Education Agency told them they either get rid of the symbolism as it pertains to the Confederacy, or Lee would no kid that graduated from Lee would be able to get into school, into college. And that got it, boy. That was the shot in armor that was needed. And they told him it had to be done immediately, right now. Mm-hmm. You would stop playing Dixie, you would stop having the Confederate flag, you would stop shooting the cannon and all of that stuff. And boy, let me tell you, and when they did that, when we left, they told us to get out of the school board meeting, because it wasn't about 8 or 10 of us there, black. And we got out of there, because boy, because they were getting ready to do us a job.
Yeah.
And so we got out of there, me and Attorney Pierce and Miss Lee, myself and my wife, and I can't remember who was there, but it wasn't about eight or 10 of us. And we got out. And so that's how the symbolism would change. But then still, that didn't stop the stuff at Lee. Lee had, boy, they had.
Was it just like a whole bunch of like?
Oh yeah, it was. It was.
But that Concerned Parents and Patrons organization saved a lot of jobs for teachers. We did a lot of good things to help the teachers.
But we were strong. We had a powerful organization, and it was, you know, they weren't afraid, and we were big in numbers. And so then nobody fired anybody from the job. And I had a junction service in, and I was working and so it just so happened the grand jury tried to indict me. They at least, I don't know if they tried, but Errol White, who was the foreman of the grand jury,
mm-hmm.
He had a building, he had a bookstore, and I was doing his floors, his janitorial service. I mean, and when he found out it was me, boy, that man liked to die. But all that time, he had been paying me, you know, and so he tore that contract up like right now, and got away. I mean, he was a former FBI agent, and but anyway, we got out of there and got out of there, and that was kind of funny after, because I had all of the service, general service, in Wine Garden Shopping Center.
Mm.
And, but then when he found out that, but our organization was so strong and so big, until if you did something to me, you're going to pay for it legally.
Mm.
Yeah, you're going to wipe it, they're going to wipe you out.
I mean, was that something normal, like, everyday kind of deal? Was like white people coming up and trying to, like, scare black people?
No, they did at Lee. Your Uncle Javon, I mean, they had to fight every day. They had to go across there.
Uncle Javon, though?
Yeah, Uncle Javon.
See, he went to Lee.
He went to Lee. Mm-hmm. He graduated from Lee. But they had a courtyard out there in front.
You mean just generally outside of the school system, white people at Lee. Intimidating?
I mean, like, what about like in the school hallways? Was there any of that?
In the school?
Mm-hmm. Like while they were at school, or was it like just off campus?
No, it was off campus. But John Tyler, they didn't mess with John Tyler too much, because these black folks over here, because they outnumbered. When you were, that John Tyler was basically in North Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of black people here. So, no, we didn't have that kind of problem. But Lee, they had to fight every day. And there was little black boys were hitting white girls, slapping them.
but they would intimidate them.
Yeah, they would make them.
They weren't doing
force them.
Just to do it. It was because of the way they were being treated.
Treated, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't take it.
And it's a strange thing when you don't know what freedoms you're entitled to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't resist because it's the norm.
Mm-hmm.
We grew up drinking out of black and white, black water, mm-hmm. you know.
Black color, and white.
Color,
yeah. Segregated water fountains.
Yeah. And we grew up being discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
So it took something happening to arouse our thinking and make us know you can do better. You can stand up against it. You don't have to settle for this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so easy to just take whatever's handed to you and don't try to do different. And it takes a lot of nerve to go against
Amen.
The grain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it make y'all feel like happy to say like me or Jaqueline or anything, like we're able to go to schools that we can't go to? Like I can go to All Saints now,
yeah.
which is like 90% white. I can still get a good education. Yeah.
That's why it means so much to us to see you not only go there but achieve.
Mm.
And boy, that means.
And when we say we're so proud of mm-hmm. you, that's the reason. Because see, we came from behind,
mm-hmm.
and we're not accustomed to being able to go where we want to go and do what we want to do.
Yeah.
And it lets us know that the insults and the things that we went through
was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And for you guys to take advantage of it mm-hmm. means all the more.
All it means, everything.
It means a lot to
yes.
us. Mm-hmm. So we're proud and happy to know that you're taking
yes,
advantage
sir.
Of it. And your granddaddy, I believe if he'd gone on to school, he had that kind of brain. He's very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't go to college. I went to business school mm-hmm. when I got out of high school. I went to because in Corsicana, we didn't even have typewriter.
Oh, mm-hmm. No, we didn't. We didn't have typewriter, didn't have a cafeteria, didn't have a gym. We didn't have none of those things. That was supposed to be equal, separate but equal.
Right. And then I went to Dallas and went to business school and learned how to handle business.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was always business-minded. She had an 8th grade education, but she saw a woman standing behind a counter in Corsicana, a black woman, and she had a little drugstore and her son was a pharmacist. And that woman would say, "May I help you?" And that was my mother's desire to be able to stand behind the counter and say, "May I help you?" And mm-hmm. consequently, she opened her own cafe in Corsicana, and then when she moved to Tyler, she opened one here. And she told me that anything that you can sell, you can make money off of.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what she did. And so she's still famous in North Tower for her hamburgers and chili dogs. And Rosedale has had a giant at the business. He managed a funeral home and was an operations manager for the company he worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a newspaper. Our newspaper got up to 6 pages. And we have some copies of it. And then, of course, I had the daycare center.
Won't you take
yeah.
a copy? Give him a copy if you know.
I'll have to locate one.
We got to give him, because he need to take one to school and let him see what we did. We had a professional
sure.
newspaper.
That's mm-hmm. fine. I can take that up there. If we can't find it today, we can take it up there, like,
okay.
sometime this week.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime.
So, another thing, in town, we had a lot of black businesses, and with integration, they disappeared
mm-hmm.
because we were so anxious to get to the things that the white people had, and we forgot
yeah.
about ourselves. So we don't have nearly the businesses that we used to.
They were used to that diet.
Well, when integration came, you could go where you wanted to go or to eat and to participate in black. Going to the cleaners, white cleaners, and whatever business it was. And
mm-hmm.
so you went there because you felt like you were programmed to think that what they had was the best.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't necessarily mean that, but that's what we were programmed to believe. And so that's what we did. And segregation is a terrible weapon. It is.
I was the first African-American to check groceries in the Safeway store here in town.
Really?
Safeway was one of the biggest chain grocery stores in
Tyler?
In the United States.
Really?
In the
States, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the first one to check groceries. And there was products called Watkins products. And there was one black man who sold Watkins products, but I was the first black woman.
Yeah.
I was the only person to have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week childcare in town.
That was something we hired white people, Mexican. We
nondescript. We had at least 11 people to work at all times. Mm-hmm.
That is right. I completely forgot that the daycare was 24 hours.
Yeah. So. You remember the daycare?
Yeah, right? Of course.
So we got some firsts behind our name. Mm-hmm. And that just goes to show you, if you want to do something, you can do it. And that's what my mother told me. If you want to do something, you just try it. And
what it means, you got to take advantage of the opportunities that you've been offered, the things you've been exposed to. You got to take advantage of it. That's just what you have done, just like what you've done. And many other youngsters have done the same thing. And we did, but we were never given that opportunity. And so consequently, we didn't have that chance to do it. And that's why, you know, I'm and I know we can compete, because look at you. Look at you, Kelly. Look at the kids who have come out of white institutions and at the top of the rung. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just proud. That's why I say I'm proud of you. I'm very proud of you. And you've achieved the things I know that you could do. And you're not finished yet. I'm proud of Candace. Candace went straight on. I wish to see her walk down these steps here. And of course, Candace, because of integration, she would never went to a public school. All her schooling has come through private, just like you, like all of yours have come through private. Well, no, you did go to
public school. I went to public school for a little bit.
In band, yeah.
That was just middle school and junior high.
But
she's a doctor. On top of that, she's a geneticist.
But you can achieve what you want to achieve if you put forth the effort. I mean, nobody's giving you anything, and that's what white people are always afraid of. I think that black people are going to outdo them. And in some instances, they have. They have. You know, you just look at what you've done. You know, you come there and you're at the top, I guess, at least I know you're in the top 10. You know, if you're not in the top 3 or 4. And I don't know how you're going to come out, you know, I mean, through honors, you know, with Val, Sal, and all that stuff. But
I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of smart kids in my school.
Well, it is. Yeah.
Well, the thing about it, they offer classes that the public schools don't. Mm-hmm. And you have an opportunity to learn more. Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it, you know what, the difference between you and what the average child going that black or white, you took advantage of what the avenue that was, you were put on and the things you were offered to you. You've taken advantage of it. And that's the reason for success. That's how you succeed. You got to take advantage of the opportunities that's offered to you. You can't go there with a closed mind and closed mouth and closed eyes and a closed mind, but an open mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, just all you can do is just talk all the time. But you got to be able to listen and to achieve.
That's not gonna be on you.
Yeah.
You turn that off.
No, don't turn it. I want them to hear it. That's all right. I want them to hear it.
It's all good. That was long enough, I think. But thank y'all.
But we're just so proud of you.
I really appreciate that.
But you know what, John? Too, this is what I'm going to say. And me and Rostel said this sometime. He and I both came from outdoor toilets and not a lot of conveniences. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of formal education when you really look at it. But we were able to come to town and have businesses and do things that people that have been offered opportunities all along didn't do. Because, you know, we had this little business down, but the business over there was an infant center. Mm-hmm. And then after somebody set it on fire, then I turned it into that event center. And we had the newspaper and we owned our own businesses. But that's just because we put forth the effort. Mm-hmm. And I can see making money in almost anything, how you can make money out of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like that daycare center, I had a house cleaning service for 13 mm-hmm. years. I had three women to work with me all the time, mm-hmm. and I'd hire extra ones if I needed. I had that for 13 years, and we were passing by that building. I told Rochelle, I said, don't look like Purdy's using that building. He said, would you like to do that? I said, yeah. I'd never done daycare, but I kept kids in my home. Mm-hmm. And turned it into mm-hmm. a very lucrative mm-hmm. business. And so we made our mark in town. We didn't come here and rust out. Mm-hmm. And few business owners in town, coming from Carson County, Cotton Fields, and Outdoor Tartar.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. It is. It really is. But to God be the glory, because it was only because of God that brought us out of darkness into the marvelous light and made us, put us on the top, and we were at the bottom, and He brought us up. I mean, He didn't waste no time. He brought us up there, and when it come time to get out, He just like we got in there, He took us out.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's marvelous. Now, your grandmother had a cleaning service before, house cleaning service before she went to daycare center, and the same people that used to pay her 75 cents an hour, paying her
75 cents an hour. Can you even think about
50,
that?
75 cents?
Yeah, to work.
Can you think about that?
Mm-mm. You can't even think like that.
I would go do maid work
mm-hmm.
all day long for $4.
For $4.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we used to pick cotton. I used to pick cotton for 95 cents a hundred. And you were lucky to get 200. You know, if you could pick 200, that's $1.90. That's what you made that whole day, since early that morning until sundown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What you think about that?
It's crazy.
It is. But on this maid service, when I go to work, I'm doing what this woman tell me to do. I want you to do this today, I want you to do that thing. She's gonna pay me 50 cents an hour. And I decided that I could do a business, turn that into a business. So I got, Rochdale had been doing giant business. I got one of his old vacuum cleaners, upright vacuum cleaner with, you know, mm-hmm. the work recently. Mm-hmm. A mop, bucket, some rags, just and some cleaning supplies.
Just some stuff you had lying around the house. You made a business out of it?
Same stuff. And where I had so washing products, I had a little carrying case,
mm-hmm.
and I put some cleaning stuff in that little carrying case. And I went to these people, and I told them, I have a professional service, and I tell them how much I'm going to charge them to clean the house.
Mm-hmm.
Same people were paying me $200 or $300 a day. They were paying me 50 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm. And I went right from right over there, the Stockman Company, right over there. I went there sweeping the floors, making $1 an hour sweeping the floors. When I left there,
mm-hmm.
the owner of the company, because he should offer me a percentage of the company, but anyway, he didn't. But he offered me an enormous salary to stay there because I was operation manager, and I literally ran the place. But I went there sweeping the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left there, I was operation manager and was making, you know, big bucks then. And he offered me bigger bucks to stay, but we had just opened this business in 89, and I retired in 90. And so God has just, He's really been good to us. We are blessed. He has blessed us.
Yeah. All right. So. Thank y'all. I love y'all.
Now you know about us.
I know a lot more.
Yeah, so that's where you